don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and as always, I enjoy being here with Mark Durkin, my co-host and executive producer of the show. Good morning.
And good morning again to you, Rebecca. Good seeing you.
Yes, good to see you, too. And this morning, we want to continue our discussion on learning disabilities by taking a detailed look at a disorder that we briefly mentioned at the beginning of the series. And as we discovered with dyslexia, there are also stereotypes and misconceptions, as well as some overlapping symptoms and treatments when it comes to ADHD.
And joining us again this morning, once again, we welcome Sherilee Marsh to Education Nation. Sherilee, you've been such a blessing to us over the last month, giving us such crucial information, helpful solutions, and how to diagnose and really thrive with dyslexia. We know that that's really your emphasis. And we also know that you're a learning specialist for students with dyslexia, and you help students with their reading at Liberty Classical Academy. Sherilee also has a master's degree in special education and is trained in the Orton-Gillingham approach. And she joins us again to discuss ADHD, its symptoms, how it plays out in the classroom, and what teachers and parents can do to help students thrive in the midst of ADHD. Sherilee, thank you again.
Thank you for
joining us on Education Nation.
Thank you.
You know, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, about 9% of U.S. children and 4% of adults have this disorder. Could you share with our audience what the ADHD acronym stands for and what it is specifically?
Sure. ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactive Disorder, and that's actually with or without the hyperactivity component. And maybe the other thing to note is that it's actually not considered a learning disability in the sense that it's not related to necessarily the learning process. It's just what compiles to make learning difficult, if that makes sense. It's an issue with staying in focus, paying attention. Sometimes it's controlling behavior and, like I said, hyperactivity. And it's not considered a learning disability. However, 30 to 50% of children with ADHD often do have a specific learning disability, such as dyslexia. Yeah. Yep, exactly. And it's supposed to be about 2 million children in the U.S. that are affected with ADHD.
How many percentage of dyslexia students did you say have ADHD too? Is that what you said?
30 to 50% of children who have ADHD also have a disability on top of that.
Okay.
Right, a learning disability. It's also neurobiological in nature, and this is interesting, but it's believed to impact the neurotransmitters in the frontal cortex, and PET scans have noted that ADHD brains show a distinct difference from the non-ADHD brains, and also that neurotransmitters are thought to cause mood disorders like depression and anxiety, but it's a different part of the brain. So they're all.
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting.
It is interesting.
You mentioned that one, it being diagnosed in children, the rough medium age, it sounds like, that it's diagnosed is around the age of 7. Is that correct?
It is.
And then also, it's best known for hyperactive behavior and attention difficulties. What might be some other more common symptoms of ADHD?
Sure. When a child is diagnosed with ADHD, the professionals that are diagnosing look at inattentive types of children who are just inattentive, but they don't have the hyperactivity. And then they also look at those who do have that hyperactive or impulsive component. And there are 9 symptoms that they look at. And for a child to be diagnosed, they need to have at least 6. As you get to age 17, the DSM-4 says they have to have at least 5.
Okay.
So some of those, though, are just that difficulty with paying attention to details, careless mistakes, sustaining attention or staying on task when in class or doing activities. When being spoken to, it'll appear as though they're just not listening. And following through with instructions can be very difficult, finishing homework, chores, duties around the home or in school or even in the workplace when it comes to adults. Difficulty with organizing tasks beginning, middle, end, and following through with those things. And maybe just a reluctance to doing things because of how difficult it is to stay focused on them. Often children with ADHD will lose things. They'll lose their pencil. They're always looking for their notebook. They know it's there, but they've lost it and they don't know where it is. They can be distracted by things going on around them. And like I said earlier, just the daily tasks that need to take place, often for adults, it's hard to get them done. Paying the bills, running the errands, keeping the house clean. So basically 6 out of 9 of those would be important for the inattentive type. Mm-hmm. And then when you start to look at the kids that are hyperactive or impulsive, you'll see them be more fidgety. They're getting up out of their chair a lot in school. You see them, the kids that are running and climbing on everything as you're making your way wherever you're going, often unable to play or engage in leisure activities quietly. There's a lot going on. And then they just have that motor. You see them on the go, and their minds are on the go. That's literally what's happening. Kids can have trouble in school with blurting and being impulsive with not being able to filter their thoughts before they let them out of their mouth. So that leads to disruption with their social situations and whatnot. Also, maybe a hard time waiting, impatient that way, like in line or waiting for a turn to raise their hand. And it just seems like a lot of kids with ADHD with that hyperactivity and impulsiveness is there's just a difficulty within the social situation to understand and to be able to put themselves into the right position in a conversation. You know, right. They might blurt into it or interrupt into it. And yeah, that's where some of those struggles are. So they have to have 6 of those either for impulsive or for just the inattentive type.
Yeah, that's a very comprehensive list. Now, there's some listeners out there that are saying, okay, based on some of the things you've mentioned.
Yeah.
That sounds like to me like attention deficit disorder, ADD, but mm-hmm. we're talking about mm-hmm. ADHD. So, you know, for those parents that might be just automatically thinking, okay, attention deficit disorder,
right.
What would you share with them that might be, you know, obvious in terms of differences between mm-hmm. ADHD and ADD mm-hmm. to help them distinguish?
Very good question. So the idea of the ADHD, it was first identified in the early 1900s. So it's been around for about 100 years. And the first things that they identified were those things, the inattentiveness, the hyperactiveness, and the impulsiveness. And so in the 70s and 80s, they differentiated it by the ADHD with the hyperactive or the ADD, which is just the attention deficit, the inattentive type. So the kids that aren't up and moving, but they just always seem like they are not attending to what's going on. And then in 1994, the DSM-4 brought back in the H, and they call the whole thing ADHD.
Okay.
And there are 3 subtypes. So you have the predominantly inattentive, you have the predominantly hyperactive and impulsive, or you have the child that is both of those. Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also mentioned mm-hmm. that there's a certain percentage of the population, I think, didn't you earlier mm-hmm. in the show, mm-hmm. That has this ADHD. Did you say it was like 10% or 9% of children and 7% of adults? Is that what you said? Do you remember?
Mark was saying that, but I can say that in a classroom of 24 to 30, you're going to have 1 or 2.
Okay. Because when I also hear some of these symptoms, mm-hmm. I think, well, a lot of that just goes along with normal child development. Mm-hmm. And so it's distinguishing that it's that much more than what would be typical for a child their age, right? Isn't that an important distinction to make?
And based on development for a child, and taking that into account, it also has to be in existence for at least 6 months.
Okay.
And be something mm-hmm. that other kids are outgrowing, but mm-hmm. they're still stuck in it.
Right.
That makes sense.
And there is that discrepancy between young children and adults. Again, 9% mm-hmm. of U.S. children versus 4%
okay,
of adults.
Okay, there we go. That was the number I was looking for.
Mark got
but
it.
The point is, 9% is still a small number, and mm-hmm. so many of these symptoms sound typical of just a typical child. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm just trying to make sure that our listeners understand mm-hmm. that it's still only 9% of children that are diagnosed with this. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. there needs to be a distinction made between what is typical and normal for this age versus mm-hmm. what is beyond and considered ADHD. So,
and also to keep in mind then that parents and teachers that see these patterns in kids, if they set them up for success and provide them with structure that they need, and that these kids may still struggle even mm-hmm. with those parameters put mm-hmm. in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Good to know.
That helped? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've defined and given some symptoms for ADHD and also differentiated it from ADD. But what our listeners may not know is it's also common to confuse ADHD with autism. Mm-hmm. So why are those two disorders often confused, and what sets ADHD apart from autism?
Sure, that's a really good question. Why don't I just define the autism spectrum disorder for you, and then you can mm-hmm. see how it differs from how we defined ADHD. The autism spectrum disorder refers to a range of conditions characterized by challenges with social skills, repetitive behaviors, speech and nonverbal communication, as well as by unique strengths and differences. And there's not one autism, but many types. Mm-hmm. And they're caused by different combinations of genetic and environmental influences. But ADHD was those three specific mm-hmm. types. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they can coexist, but not often. There's a lot of that going on, and you're alluding mm-hmm. to that. There's a lot mm-hmm. of overlapping of things. Mm-hmm. But the autism is just a totally different definition, and it's diagnosed completely differently.
Okay.
So,
okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Very good. And what type of a specialist would be involved in making an official diagnosis of ADHD? Mm-hmm. In other words, where can ADHD be diagnosed?
Yep. Depending on where you're looking, it starts with a doctor, and mm-hmm. you have to have a medical doctor. And often there are schools that are involved with, you know, making that referral or asking, you know, they see it happening in school. So there's really like a team of people that come together to do a diagnosis, and it's in the home where the parents are doing their part by filling out questionnaires. And it's also one of those things where it's usually present in more than one location. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I know on our last show when we were talking about dyslexia, we talked mm-hmm. about going to a neuropsychologist. We talked about Fraser Center. And mm-hmm. I know that Fraser also does diagnose ADHD. And mm-hmm. so probably all the same organizations right. that you yep. mentioned last week would yep. be a good place
and
to
LDA
be.
LDA of Minnesota also.
Yeah. Say that one again.
LDA of Minnesota, which mm-hmm. stands for Learning Disabilities Association
Great.
Of Minnesota.
Great. It's just
mm-hmm.
important to have those resources.
It is.
And,
yeah.
you know, we hear all the time that ADHD is overdiagnosed. What are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. I have heard that too, and I actually looked into this recently, and I read that the American Medical Association, also the Center for Disease Control, have concluded that it has not been overdiagnosed, and it's probably stemming out of an awareness and an increased awareness mm-hmm. of the number of individuals that are being identified because we're aware now.
I see.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right.
You mentioned earlier, Shirley, mm-hmm. about the National Institute of Mental Health classifying ADHD mm-hmm. in those three subtypes. You did mm-hmm. talk about predominantly inattentive, mm-hmm. predominantly hyperactive, impulsive. The third one you mentioned, combined hyperactive, impulsive, and inattentive, mm-hmm. was actually the most common form mm-hmm. of ADHD.
Right.
I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, given these three types. Mm-hmm. Is there any thing that you look for specifically to say, okay, I can highlight that one, say, over the other two?
I would say that when you have the children that are, I'm going to just talk about all three of them to try to mm-hmm. come around to
yeah,
that,
no
but
problem.
Those that are predominantly inattentive, it's harder to maybe pick them out at first because they just like, they're daydreamers.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I did learn that often the girls and the gifted children fall into that category more often than the boys. And they're often diagnosed later in life because of that reason. They appear to be daydreamers. And for the gifted, when they're highly intelligent, they can mask it and they kind of figure out, you know, how to make it work. So girls are often of the inattentive type. And then when it comes to the predominantly hyperactive and impulsive type, those are easier to spot. They're moving right away.
Right.
And so then when it comes to the child that's both inattentive but also hyperactive, it's school is really hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard at home. It's hard to get out the door in the morning. And it's hard to just get homework done. And it's across the board. Those are the children that okay. are easily mm-hmm. easily first spotted,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick time out here on Education Nation. When we return, we'll discuss ADHD's relationship with IQ, treatment strategies employed in the classroom, and medical treatments that are also available for daily living. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We don't need no education. We don't need
Welcome back to Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, joined in studio by my co-host, Mark Durkin, and once again, learning specialist, Shirley Marsh.
Hello.
Hello. We are discussing the symptoms of ADHD and how this disorder is diagnosed. And now we want to shift our attention to its relationship to a person's IQ, as well as treatment methods. There's much debate as to whether or not someone with ADHD automatically has a high IQ, and I have heard that as well. Mm-hmm. There is even more debate as to what such a correlation really means. So when you're in your experience, Shirley, mm-hmm. is there any relationship between ADHD and high IQ?
It's a really good question, and there's a really clean answer that intelligence has nothing to do with ADHD.
Interesting. Mm.
All people of all levels of intelligence can have ADHD. And
okay.
may have it.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that what happens to children who do have ADHD is that they are at a greater risk for lower academic and social problems.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a greater chance for them dropping out of school because it stems with just the difficulties of day-to-day life of staying on top of their mm-hmm. studies and getting everything turned in on time, and therefore high intelligence but difficulty with being able to produce mm-hmm. in the school setting is frustrating for those kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, kids can have high intelligence mm-hmm. and still have ADHD, but it doesn't, there's not a strong correlation.
Yes, not yep. a strong correlation.
Yeah.
Which is different than dyslexia. Didn't
correct.
You say there was a strong correlation between dyslexia
mm-hmm.
and
I did.
High IQ, correct?
Yep, because with dyslexia, that's a marker that it's not an intelligence issue that's getting in the way of them learning to read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like we talked about, being at the sound base mm-hmm. of learning our language.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So since many with ADHD seem to focus their attention on something they enjoy doing,
mm-hmm.
what strategies can teachers implement to help ADHD students continue to enjoy the things of school?
It's a really, really good question. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about this because for kids with ADHD, if you ask them if they like school, I would say that close to 100% of the children I have asked will say no. I don't like school.
Oh, so sad.
It is really sad. And so the best advice that I can give to teachers is that it's so important to invest in those kids
mm-hmm.
and to show them their worth in school and to just figure out what makes them tick, find mm-hmm. out what it is they truly enjoy, ask them questions, and develop a good relationship with those kids mm-hmm. because they need people in their corner. They already feel against the world when it comes to school. Mm-hmm. So that's the best advice. Mm-hmm. that I would give mm-hmm. right off the bat because a lot will flow out of having adults believe in you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's really huge for any child.
Yep.
But you're right, particularly if you're struggling with
right.
attention.
Right.
Yeah, you need to know that the adults are on your side and really mm-hmm. cheering for you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So for those students whose focus is elsewhere, mm-hmm. what strategies can teachers implement to help teachers mm-hmm. cultivate enjoyment in school and direct their attention to the process of learning?
Mm-hmm. It all stems back to the basis of what is the difficulty for these kids. And as organized as you can be in the classroom and as structured as you can be and as clear as you can be, benefits everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so understanding that about these children and knowing it's not that they are choosing to be disorganized or choosing to not turn in their work, but understanding this is difficult for them,
mm-hmm.
that is where you can begin. And it involves maybe modifying instructions where for a child who can handle you just giving directions out loud and they've got it and they know what to do, you might need to be writing things down for children,
mm-hmm.
and it benefits everybody if it's in writing. When it's the classroom setting, just touching base with those children and asking, do you understand what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
All the while wanting to prepare these kids to becoming independent and training them to know to ask you for help. But just assuming that they understand will only frustrate you in the end as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
because these kids do need help.
Mm-hmm.
And why not help them when they need it,
right.
if you already anticipate it? Frequent breaks are really good for kids just to get up and move around. And just staying on top of that organization piece with them. That's one of the roles I get to play at our school, which is beautiful. And I watch kids become more independent with that. Where in the fall, they're coming to me almost every day showing me their planner. This is what I have. It's in my backpack. I'm going to take it home and get it done. To this part of the year where they're into the swing of things. And with our school being the size that it is, teachers are able to stay on top of that, I think, a little bit easier. Does that help answer that?
Yeah, that's really good. Well, I know sometimes even just little markers saying all eyes up here before giving instructions in a classroom, you know, I would have thought that that would just come naturally. But my experience over the years of having had four children in a few different schools before Liberty opened is that there's a lot of teachers who don't just come by that naturally. And those little cues to pay attention at certain points are so helpful for all the students.
Exactly.
You're right, not just the ADHD students. So, yeah, that's good.
You know, we've mentioned a couple of times on the program about that discrepancy, even though the numbers are a little smaller, 9% for U.S. children, 4% of adults having this disorder. With the constant reinforcement with a lot of the strategies that you just mentioned, does that discrepancy in those numbers begin to shrink because children are outgrowing their diagnosis?
It's another very good question. I did a little research on this recently for you as well, and it's kind of a gray area. But what I have found is that the hyperactivity and impulsivity is often outgrown. There still will be that inattentiveness or distractibility, just lack of organization skill that takes place. And some recent studies show that a third of the adults identified during their childhood experience little impairment as an adult. So that's one third.
That's
great. Then there's another third that continue to exhibit the symptoms, but they have strategies in place and they're using them and they are successful. And then there's a third that continue to just be treated with their professionals, whether it be medication or counseling, whatever it is they need. So it's both, you know. But then also I did read that after puberty, which I hadn't learned this before, 40 to 50% of children will improve and develop strong coping mechanisms and no longer be as affected by the symptoms in a negative manner. So that's an interesting number, half of them.
Which, again, so. That's good to know, and it's encouraging for those parents who are dealing with this in their own children.
And you mentioned that that tier of a third of those people that go on to adulthood and still start show, or they continue to show those signs of ADHD. How does that defect, rather that disorder affect adulthood, and what treatment strategies are recommended at that stage?
Right. It's hard because when it comes to adulthood, it's easier to look at a child and know, oh, it must just be ADHD or that kid. You know, people, they do that and it's not fair, but they do. So when you get to adulthood, you're often branded as lazy, unmotivated, and if you're still struggling to get your work done on time, that's frustrating for your boss. And if it's taking you longer to get through tasks, that's frustrating for you. You see your peers finishing their work on time or even early and you're still not even halfway through. And then you rush and then you're stuck with mistakes that you didn't intend to make, but you wanted to get done. It's also sad, but adults with ADHD are most likely to lose their job, or more likely anyway. And then this is interesting, but often adults with ADHD will hold 50 to 75% more jobs over the course of a 10-year period than those without. And in the end, they average $10,000 less a year in income. But with proper treatment and systems in place, just like it was with childhood, there are many adults with ADHD that are successful in life and they are doing just fine.
Absolutely. And that leads to my next question. We talked about the strategies implemented in the classroom. Are there any medical treatments available for those suffering from the disorder?
A psychostimulant such as Ritalin or Adderall are most frequently prescribed for children, and they're typically safe, and when they're given correctly, they're tolerated well by children. In my personal experience of the children that have ADHD that are on medication, they know that it's not what makes them successful, in the sense that they know I am who I am, but this helps me to be successful. It's coming alongside them, and they see the benefit of it. I haven't had many children say, I don't like taking my medicine. Most of them are like, this is a good thing for me. Okay. That's my experience.
I'm going to just add one caveat that I know that there has been some research that has stated for kids who have been on it long term that there can be detrimental effects of lack of motivation and some of the things in adulthood. And so while they're in school, it's a good thing. I do think that parents who are listening should really carefully consider all the different perspectives on treating it with medication, because I know there are some studies out there that would suggest long term usage of those psychostimulants is not beneficial to the kids as adults.
Right. And also knowing that there are non-medical ways that you can mm-hmm. work with ADHD. It's, you know, changing diet, structure, right. screen time. Yeah. I mean, there's so many
reducing screen time.
Behavior mm-hmm. management things that you can work with. The key there is that you are faithful and you are consistent with those things.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I like to also talk about the medication being, I don't want to call it a Band-Aid, but maybe that's the way you want to look at it, that there's growth that needs to take place and healing that can take place within the way a child with ADHD is making it in the world, right? And so if you have that medication alongside that, but you are working on those skills and not just using the medication as the fixer.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make
sense?
That's
important.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
really, really, really mm-hmm. important.
Mm-hmm. So how important is it for parents of ADHD children to modify their own behavior mm-hmm. and learn to manage the behavior of their child?
Mm-hmm. It's so important. It's so important for parents to understand what their children are going through. And there are support groups in the area. There are lectures you can go to that where parents can understand what's going on and how they best can come alongside their children at home and parent them in the right way. And then also with the knowledge they have to be able to take it to the school setting and to be able to talk to the teachers and be open about it and say, this is my kid. This is how my kid works. This is what I found to be very helpful at home. And for those children to not have expectations placed on them too early, meaning if you, like we talked earlier about the directions you need to give kids, you know, do this, do this, and do this. If you know that by doing that, your child is not going to do them, don't frustrate yourself. Just mm-hmm. one at a time. Having visuals at home, checklists for kids to check off. I did this, this, and this today. A reward system in place. Whatever works for your family. But know that there are support groups and there are lecturers that you can work with that will give you those ideas. And you're not alone. There are a lot of parents out there that are seeking that same knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. And then there was also this concept of developing behavioral techniques for managing a child's ADHD symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about that you could follow some guidelines that can limit destructive behavior and help the child overcome self-doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. do you have some ideas for that? Because I'm sure with this mm-hmm. comes some self-doubt because they are running into some failure or mm-hmm. they're getting tagged mm-hmm. at school as being, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. maybe even bullies in some case if they're mm-hmm. really active and mm-hmm. pushing kids in the hall and what have you.
Right.
You have to be careful with their own self-esteem.
Right. And I suggest working with a counselor if you suspect those things. Mm-hmm. Just finding someone that you trust and working with them to, once again, just acquire the knowledge you need as a parent mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to be able to do right by your child, but also then to have the child understand we're on your team mm-hmm. and we don't, you know,
right.
we want to help you through. It's a bigger picture than just inattentiveness and hyperactivity.
Right, right.
Yep.
So can you name, you mentioned that there are some support mm-hmm. groups. Where can people go mm-hmm. with ADHD if they are looking for support
right.
groups?
LDA of Minnesota, I referred to them earlier. They're located right here in Minneapolis, and they have regular support groups for both students, parents, and adults
oh.
that meet regularly, and they have workshops and lectures on executive functioning, which is what's involved in staying organized and on top of things, and I would highly recommend them.
Okay,
yep.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Well, that is all the time we have for this installment of Education Nation, and please join us again next week as we wrap up our series on learning disabilities. Shirley Marsh joins us one more time as we explore auditory processing disorder. Have a great weekend, everyone, and check out our podcasts on Education Nation and iTunes.